Hello and welcome to a podcast from the Royal New Zealand College of Urgent Care. My name is Guy Melrose. Today we're looking at giant cell arteritis. We're going to discuss how this condition presents to urgent care, any initial workup and management, and how best to refer these patients. We will not be covering the ongoing management beyond the disposal from urgent care. This is an important diagnosis to consider in the headache presentation, and one we should not miss. So I'd like to welcome to our podcast Dr. Sujatha Kamalaksha, who is a consultant physician and a rheumatologist based up in the Northland of New Zealand in Whangarei. And she's kindly agreed to talk to the podcast today about a topic of interest to her that she developed during her registrar training years, and that is the topic of giant cell arteritis. So welcome to the podcast, Sujatha, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Guy, for inviting me to talk on this topic.
So we had a chat a few months ago with Avajit Barai about headaches, particularly migraine headaches, and giant cell arteritis is one of those differentials that he mentioned, and it is something that we will come across in an urgent care setting. But I think the good place to start with all of these topics is, what exactly is giant cell arteritis? How would you define it?
I think this topic of headache is very interesting, and defining GCA, as we understand, or giant cell arteritis, is fairly easier compared to understanding various headaches and causes behind them. Giant cell arteritis, in a nutshell, to be very aware, is a very inflammatory condition and classified as large vessel vasculitis. It is autoimmune in nature, and as we were discussing earlier, higher the age, higher the risk. So the older the person is, higher the risk of them having GCA as a cause behind headache. Could be preceded or maybe associated with the polymyalgia rheumatica, which is kind of sister condition. Essentially, you're looking at somebody, you are seeing an elderly person who has got headache or no headache and associated other symptoms that we will discuss further on, with typically raised CRP or ESR or both.
So the person sitting in front of me in the clinic will generally be an older person, kind of 70 years and older, and will have presented with a headache. What type of headache would they describe to me when they present?
Although this is, many people understand the headache as GCA headache as a very typical temporal headache, but it need not be temporal headache. But yes, classically recognized as temporal headaches. But it could be occipital, maybe associated with scalp sensitivity. So if you were to ask them, they could say that I can't wear the glasses because the arms where they sit hurts, or I can't comb hair because it is so sensitive. I can't put my head down on the pillow because it is so sensitive. And when you examine them, obviously, they will be tender in all these places. But interesting in the presentation is the ones that are not classical in presentation. That is what I would probably highlight on in this discussion, other than the classic presentation. Sometimes if we don't ask and look for them, we don't get these clues at all, like ophthalmic symptoms say, typically they say it is amaurosis pregax, that is sudden loss of vision, but that is only one side of the story. It could be diplopia, it could be just blurred vision. They could describe it as a very bright vision, basically a distorted vision. It may or may not be associated with classic stroke symptoms as well. And in elderly, it could be posterior circulation stroke symptoms. Now, interesting, however it is, most of the time when we get referrals, we don't get an associated history of jaw claudication because we don't ask for it. So what is jaw claudication? They describe the pain in the jaws, either of the jaws or both, when they use it, just like a claudication that we would describe in the legs. Sometimes it could just be typical of a trismus, presentation, they can just say, I feel so painful over there that I just can't open the mouth or I can't chew, so I have not been eating for many days. That also goes to show that we need to expand our questionnaire if we are suspecting GCA to more systemic features than fever, night sweats, weight loss, or other symptoms of arm or leg claudication. Because as we just talked very early on, it is a large vessel vasculitis. So aorta is the most common region and any branch of aorta could be affected.
And we mentioned at the start that age is a factor. Are there any other risk factors that we should be aware of? Is it associated with other autoimmune diseases, for example, or any medications?
Yes. No, there have been few studies trying to associate with environmental factors like infections, maybe zoster, maybe mycoplasma, but these studies are just speculations at the far end of it. There's no definitive one particular agent that is found to be cause behind it. But so whatever the thought is, that because it occurs in those who are about 50 years or the older age group, there must have been something in the environment that provokes this autoimmune process in them. And you may not be able to find what that is, or maybe not. But once it is triggered, it becomes clinical syndrome. And as we discussed a little while ago, that how may it present is with sometimes polymyalgia rheumatica. One of the risk factors is if they already have had polymyalgia in the past, and they have had a remission for a long time, but they may also present with GCA for the first time later in life. And that is unpredictable, and we don't know what the provocation would be.
And when we're talking about an age group here, is it impossible to occur in an under 50-year-old, or is it... So if we saw someone who was, say, 45 with those sorts of symptoms that you described, is it excluded by virtue of their age, or is it just more common in the elderly?
That's a very interesting question, because I would like to draw attention to the revised ACR, which is American College of Rheumatology criteria that was released in 2016. By the virtue of it, you're right. Under 50, it is very unlikely to be GCA. So we get referrals for people who are 48 years old, 49 years old, just about at the threshold of being 50, and say classified as giant cell arthritis or polymyalgia. Both of these conditions are typically above 50. And the revised criteria has an entry point. The entry point is 50 and above. So it does not even allow under 50 to be presenting as a GCA in the clinical picture, but in their classification, not classification, diagnostic criteria. So it is difficult, because practically speaking, when clinicians are sitting over there and receiving patients, they have about 15, 20 minutes to gather information and make an estimated diagnosis, and take the diagnosis forward with appropriate referral and management. At that stage, if in doubt, I suggest that is discussed with the rheumatologist, and also consider alternate diagnosis always. Alternate diagnosis of GCA is a lot more common than the GCA as per the incidence as a cause of headache.
So if we've got somebody in front of us who's got a reasonable story and has some scalp irritation or tenderness in that temporal artery region, and we're thinking that this could be a giant cell arthritis, what investigations should we do in the community before referring or before discussing? Is there anything that you would expect to be done prior to making a phone call to a specialist?
Absolutely. That's a lot of things to be done, but I don't know how much can be done in the given circumstance in the urgent care setup. But I'm presuming if there was 15 minutes time to be invested on this case of headache, GCA is definitely one of those diagnoses not to be missed. But I think the reassuring fact is it is not as common as other diagnoses like migraine or viral headaches or sinusitis such. But the general approach should be asking the questions, as you said, like headache, temporal, occipital, scalp sensitivity, jaw claudication, stroke-like symptoms, or ophthalmic symptoms. And the other broader questions would be to look for alternate diagnoses, like do they have any weight loss, night sweats, fever, is this infection, is it infective endocarditis, is it infection hidden somewhere else, is it paraneoplastic in nature, or is it active malignancy like myeloma, lymphoma? There's a broader aspect to that, and that brings everybody to that one particular point of being a clinician and looking at the patient and listening to the story and connecting both in one streamlined fashion. Even if it is GCA, there could be other alternate diagnoses as well. And while you are examining, you're finding some features suggestive of GCA, you are also looking at other possibilities. What's the blood pressure like? What are the pulses? Is there any carotid bruit? Does this person have PMR signs, that's polymyalgia signs, that may support the diagnosis of GCA? Or if they have any other signs like rash or murmurs or arthritis or any hepatosplenomegaly, these will open the diagnosis much more for a wider differential. Then you could do the blood test. Frequently, we get called when there is a headache, very suggestive of GCA, even before we have a CRP and ESR. And when the ESR and CRP returns to be normal, then we are applying the brake pedals and wondering what could it be now, because I thought it was so strongly suggestive of GCA, but the CRP, ESR is completely normal, white cell is completely normal, what it could be. It depends on the situation that the doctor, reviewing doctor in urgent care is in. It's going to be out of hours or weekend. And if the patient does not have absolute contraindications for prednisone, then yes, I would use a moderate dose of prednisone. Typically, we use 1 milligram per kg body weight of prednisone, but we could use a bit lesser than that, about 40 milligram if they are 60 kg person, and wait till all these blood tests are back. But if there are a very strong suspicion of either eye involvement or stroke-like symptoms, this person should be referred to hospital immediately, because they may require IV methylprednisone to rescue the vision or avoid the damage due to stroke. While at that, I think it can be a little difficult while given the time parameter in the urgent care to do all of that. And if in doubt, referral to hospital is totally appropriate, because we can process the blood tests and do the chest X-ray or urine tests, etc., fairly quicker than what you guys can do in the urgent care, and make a decision, especially if the person is diabetic, has cataracts, intolerant to prednisone, can't take prednisone, like one of the patients that we had recently who had side effect of rash to prednisone recorded in past, so had to have dexamethasone instead. So in those kind of circumstances, I think asking for help is definitely the best way forward.
So in addition to the blood tests that can indicate or help indicate a giant cell arteritis, is there any imaging that could be utilized to help guide us in our diagnosis?
Yes, there has been increasing use of color Doppler ultrasound of temporal arteries. This is interesting because the Waikato Hospital started use of CDUS in their pathway, that is referral pathway for GCA diagnosis. And it is done formally in the vascular ultrasound department read by the vascular surgeon. So it is, as you know, the ultrasound is very technician dependent, both in doing the performing the investigation as well as reading of the images. And so when it is absent, then the reliability on it goes down. But in that process, what we realized was that when done properly, even if it doesn't give you the positive predictive value, the negative predictive value is quite high, thereby helping reduce the unnecessary need for temporal lateral biopsy. And on the other hand, the EULAR, which is the European League Against Rheumatism guidelines, recently have commented that temporal lateral biopsies may become invalid eventually in future if our reliability on the ultrasound goes up and if we can have a reproducible set of results all the time. So that is something to look forward to in the near future. But at the moment, we don't have that available uniformly everywhere around the country. So it is still the clinical findings and the temporal lateral biopsy that is interpreted in collection by the rheumatologist. Now, there are some times that we have used PET CT in New Zealand, but that's one way of finding out where there's increased metabolic activity in the aorta or the aortic branches when there is active arthritis. But it is far too expensive. And as you can see, based on the revised ACR criteria, if our clinical suspicion is straight on the money, then we don't need expensive diagnostic tests to say the same thing. In other findings, say example, a CT aortogram or an MR angiogram or aortogram can add to the value if that is done for some other reason. Say example, it was CT was done with contrast for finding out occult infection or malignancy, then it can be used as a surrogate investigation as well to understand if there is an underlying arthritis causing rise in inflammatory markers, weight loss, and systemic symptoms.
So an ESR and CRP are helpful and they assist in the diagnosis. If you had somebody who was, say, 75 years old, had the classic kind of symptoms and signs and history, but then had a normal ESR, does that completely exclude a giant cell arteritis? So
no.
would somebody then be able to think of a different diagnosis?
Definitely, that opens the scope for other differentials, like say if they have cervical spinosteal arthritis and occipitalgia, or if it is some other kind of headache, like if they have cerebral metastasis that is sitting over there causing pain and all the symptoms. You're right, it does not completely exclude GCA. There have been cases of positive GCA with normal CRP and ESR. I guess that is one of the instances where an urgent referral is must to the specialist. From the diagnosis point of view, the gold standard is still the rheumatologist seeing the patient and making a diagnosis. Temporal lateral biopsy is very specific, but not very sensitive because of the skip lesions, duration by when the biopsy was done, from the time of symptom onset, and from the time of prednisone treatment, and how quickly the person responds to the treatment. That is why I mentioned the reverse ACR criteria, because I think it is very easily accessible on Google. If we say revised ACR GCA criteria, because if you look at those points, point-wise, we are looking at two domains. That means to say that there is a new onset of localized headache with a sudden onset of visual disturbance, associated PMR and jaw claudication. And on examination, you find abnormal temporal artery. That is straightforward, very suggestive of GCA. And with other things like raised CRP or ESR and unexplained fever and anemia adds on to the value of that. But the entry point definitely is the age and absence of exclusion diagnosis, right? If you have an alternate diagnosis, then obviously that is excluded from that criteria. But the overall, if you look at that criteria, if the person is scoring anywhere above 3, the possibility of having GCA goes up. And somebody can comfortably start steroid at least till the referral is made, till the patient is seen, till the biopsy is done, and till further investigations like blood cultures, urine cultures, chest X-ray, all these things are undertaken. The bottom line I would like to make over there is, even if you think there is GCA, and if there is a moderate to strong suspicion of it, and if you are starting steroid, that person should be discussed with rheumatologist, whether through the hospital, whether through the referral system, or through the GP services. This person should be seen by a rheumatologist. And if you, in the meantime, find an alternate diagnosis, you can let us know that the patient does not require our services, because now you have an alternate diagnosis.
So that's a good sort of rule, I guess, that we can take forward. If we suspect a GCA and therefore consider starting steroids, that should be a trigger for us to have made the referral. Should we have any concern that starting steroids affects the diagnostic ability? Like, does the temporal artery biopsy get affected by starting steroids too early? Or is there any reason why we wouldn't start the steroid? Or is it a fairly safe bet just to start it?
Yes, if there is a strong suspicion of GCA, the burden of the disease is elderly people who are at a risk of stroke or permanent visual loss. So you are definitely starting prednisone if the suspicion is so strong. So that means to say that a requirement of temporal artery biopsy does not preclude the use of prednisone in them. So you go ahead, start the prednisone, whether going forward the biopsy will come back positive or not. And that is when the rheumatologist can put all the information together and look at the presentation, examination findings, and blood test results. Even if the biopsy is negative, then we can make a fair call if that is giant cell arthritis or not. And we can further continue with the treatment strategy as we go along. Coming to a lot of times when we ask for the biopsy, there's a thought that, oh, once they are on prednisone, this will affect the biopsy outcome. May not. Up to 2 weeks, they have found biopsy to be positive, even while on moderate to high doses of prednisone. And that depends on the degree of inflammation that person was having and extent of inflammation that person was having. The one good indicator I find clinically is a rise in CRP. If the rise in CRP was high and if there was associated polymyalgia symptoms going on, grumbling for a long time that was not clinically expressed or not picked up clinically, these people tend to have positive biopsy despite being on steroids for 10 days to 14 days.
And you've mentioned referring to a rheumatologist. Do the rheumatology services oversee all of the GCA cases? Because obviously you've mentioned that it can affect the vision. So if we have a patient who has visual change with symptoms of a headache that we're thinking GCA, do we always phone rheumatology first and you would liaise with the ophthalmologists? Or is there ever a case to call an ophthalmologist in preference to a rheumatologist?
In urgent care, doctors find a person who has got a visual loss or visual disturbance, and they find some associated symptoms that makes them suspect GCA in that patient. They should be talking to the ophthalmologist quickly. If there is a service, ophthalmology service locally, they should get the ophthalmology service quickly to decide on if that person needs IV methylprednisone. But if there are peripheral hospitals where the ophthalmology services are not available all the time, after hours or the weekends, such kind of situation, then a general physician over there can take it forward. And if that general physician is a rheumatologist, well, that is a good thing for the patient. And they can make the right appropriate decisions to admit the patient and decide whether high dose oral steroid is adequate or if IV methylprednisone is must.
And let's take this forward a few years, I guess. If this patient that we'd seen and referred was diagnosed as having GCA, treated and it settled, And then they return to me 3 or 4 years later with the same symptoms. Does it recur? Does giant cell arthritis recur? And do we just manage it exactly the same way if it does?
Correct. That is one of the risk factors. If they've already had GCA in the past, they have anywhere between 28 to 40% or 45% recurrence rate. Although I must say that I think these data, the recurrence data, is from a long time ago when steroid treatment was a bit different to what we are doing now. Prednisone treatment and tapering regime has changed since the BSR guidelines came in 2010. And there is a specific mention about how it should be slowly but steadily tapered off. And I would be interested to see how is the recurrence rate now when once we have started to follow these guidelines a lot more diligently? Because in past, the prednisone tapering was a lot more abrupt or quicker tapering. And these caused an inevitable flare and incomplete treatment or unresolved issues there that would put them at a risk of recurrence. This is still a possibility. There are people who don't respond to the treatment like the way we want them to. And there has been an increasing use of DMARD therapy like methotrexate. Although methotrexate is not the treatment, in some studies it has shown to reduce the amount of steroids required in a person with GCA. So there has been a consistent effort in trying to mitigate the or address the issue of recurrence. I must say that I don't have updated information on that, but recurrence is definitely possible. Flares are possible and are frequent. Many times there are patients who can have flare-up symptoms as they come down the dose of prednisone. And after a few years, if you see them, definitely you must suspect GCA. But at the same time, not forget the other differential diagnosis.
So I guess my take home from what you've been saying here is certainly if the patient is in the right age group, I should be thinking of this as a differential and I should be asking specific questions and in particular, not just focusing on the temporal headache, but realizing that it can lead to occipital pain and other scalp discomforts. And always to remember to ask about the jaw claudication as well as other kind of concurrent symptoms. The fear of starting prednisone shouldn't be there. If you have suspicion, it's better to start. And if you're starting prednisone, we should probably be having a phone call with the rheumatology service, unless there's eye involvement, in which case you try and get an ophthalmologist to see them in the first instance. And you've mentioned the revised American College of Rheumatology guidelines, which I will link to in the show notes for people to be familiar with, because that can help guide our diagnostic.
Yes, I think so. I can send you the link. And if it's just revised criteria, not the guidelines as such, but the criteria to suspect. When do we suspect? And I think it's a very yes or no kind of a question, really. And if people can look at it, if they have a suspicion, it just takes 30 seconds or 1 minute to go through that. And that can actually save a lot of time and have a focused approach towards the diagnosis.
Yeah, and I think something I learned from that, looking at those, are that, and what you said before, that if I was to do an ESR and it be normal, I would be falsely reassured if they had other features on those criteria that suggested it. So I think if people are thinking that they won't refer the patient immediately, maybe do some blood tests and then be reassured by that ESR. Actually, if they've got the other criteria, then the ESR doesn't actually, as you say, 3 out of those 5 gives quite a high sensitivity for GCA. So in an urgent care setting, we shouldn't necessarily think we have to do the bloods if we've got a good
correct. Yes. So if you look at the criteria, you're so right, because if you look at the domain one, if you're looking at along with me, they have only clinical features. They don't have any blood or x-ray or other kind of test results to associate. So I think those are the parameters that we still rely on. But the CRP comes back high. It is in a way, it pushes your case towards it. But that does not completely rule out, 100% rule out.
So like with a lot in medicine, the history and the examination can tell most of the story. And our doctors should be thinking about GCA when they see a headache and the other differentials of headache, which we talked with Avijit about, and will continue to go over again in the future because it's a very common presentation. But as long as we're thinking of GCA, we will hopefully not miss it, because if we do miss it, I think it would be good just to hear what are the sort of negative outcomes for a patient if we were to misdiagnose and not refer them. What are we avoiding?
In the immediate acute GCA phase, the biggest risk is of stroke and also the visual loss. And that has been very recurrently studied. The burden of health burden that goes into this particular condition in the elderly population is enormous. If it is not treated, the visual loss is permanent. And once the visual loss is permanent, the effect it has on these elderly population, if they were drivers, if they were living alone, independent, or if they are already struggling because of their mobility and are heavily dependent on their vision, it increases the health burden. It affects it adversely in the immediate phase. Typically, they say that these are extracranial arteries, hence the stroke is not true, but there are a significant number of people who can have an out-and-out ischemic stroke, especially posterior circulation stroke, and that obviously affects the final outcome because of the disability it poses with ataxia and other residual weaknesses. One of the other things that not many discuss with this is thoracic aortic aneurysms that can happen in later period of time after the GCA has occurred. So we suggest that the chest x-ray is done every 2 years after the diagnosis of GCA. The percentages vary, but they suspect around 30% or around 30 to 35%. But to what degree it happens, I'm uncertain. And I think it may be underreported, underdiagnosed, because not a lot of those people go on to get regular workup for thoracic aortic aneurysms. But when it happens, yes, of course, it adds on to the burden of the disease.
So definitely something we shouldn't be missing and something we should be thinking about. And so thank you, Sujatha, for speaking on this topic to us. It's been fascinating. I've learned a lot from talking to you, and hopefully we will not be missing any GCAs out there in our urgent care clinics, and we'll be making a nice expedient referral to the rheumatology services, a patient who's already on prednisone and properly worked up. So thank you for taking the time to talk to us.
Thank you, Guy, for inviting me. I think it has been interesting to share this with our urgent care colleagues, and we are happy to receive the calls anytime there is a concern or a doubt or any diagnostic ambiguity.